This is Desiree Scales.
And Sander Bean.
And this is High Velocity Radio, Business Radio X. And Sander, I think a miracle happened this week.
I know, it's great to see you.
Nice to see you in person. I mean, my God, it's been how many weeks?
It's been months, and you and I have been going back and forth, you handling the show one month, one week, I take it the next. And
I know, because we've been traveling. Kevin, did you miss us?
I missed you guys together, yeah.
Together.
The dynamic of it all.
Exactly, the magic.
The magic. Well, here we are. We've got a couple great guests today, very excited. We've got Travis Marier. I knew I was going to kill it.
That's
I'm
close
like,
enough.
I should know this.
Better
Italian.
Than most of my teachers throughout my life. So
are you Italian? Are you Italian?
Yes, I am.
Two Italians.
Hey, I'm Italian too.
Are you Italian?
The high five is
surrounded.
Wow, that's impressive.
So we've got Travis from Factory Web. We've got Jackie Canizzo. Can't get more Italian than that. She's the executive event director at Judson Golf. Yeah.
Jackie was giving us her profile. That's why we're laughing.
Her Roman profile. I've got the same thing. I hide it with the glasses. But anyway, so very exciting because we're going to talk about two completely separate types of businesses, which I like. I like doing that, juxtaposing.
Cool.
So Travis and I met last month at WordCamp. I was speaking and Travis was listening to me, and I hope he gleaned some good information from my talk. We talked about life cycle marketing, and Sander, you know that's one of my favorite topics.
Yes, it is. One you know well.
Yeah, and InfusionCon's in a couple weeks, so I'm excited about that.
Yeah. We should talk about that at the end if we can.
We will. We will. So, Travis, thanks for being here. I know you said you were going to be in Florida today, but you ended up showing up in person. That's great.
I forgot to even tell you. I just walked right in.
It's okay.
Oh, you're here.
I'm like, oh, he's here. So how are things going with Factory Web? I know we talked a little bit. Sounds like you guys are getting busy.
We are. We're just now really kicking off, like I was saying earlier. It's to the point where we've been doing it for a couple months now, but starting to pick up to where we have to really start looking at how we grow and how we do it in a scalable manner. And that part's fun to me.
Yeah.
And it's been fun just kind of, you know, everything from getting the CRM. I know you're a big Infusionsoft.
Yep.
We are Salesforce, but
it's okay.
But yeah, everything from getting that down to the process down to really just turn into a business more than just a freelance kind of gig.
Okay. So Factory Web specializes in websites for manufacturers, correct?
Right.
How did you guys get into that niche?
So my business partner has been running a web design firm for at least 3 to 4 years. And, you know, one of his biggest clients was a integrator for ERP systems for manufacturers. And they basically led us into this industry to say, you know, we need your help with front-end design. You know, in this industry, this kind of gone untouched, and we're really more concerned with back-end processes and things like that. And we really need your help, and I think there's a lot of other people out there that do as well, to kind of be that one-stop shop for that front-end marketing, web design, all that. We started getting into it, and we realized, wow, he's right. We started doing some research on all the websites out there for manufacturers. And then we also started doing more research on just in general manufacturing and manufacturing products and going from the B2B kind of retail space to online and how it really is just now getting kicked off in the sense that you have to be on the web if you are selling products. Yeah. There's this big shift from pure B2B and just being able to do business like that to really be able to sell through the online channel.
Interesting, because you always hear about CRM and ERP, right? I mean, those are the two buzzwords you hear when you think about enterprise software. And one, you know, you always think of them as two very separate things. But it sounds to me, and maybe you can expound on this, that you're sort of putting those two things together to a certain extent because you are working with those manufacturers. I'm sure the salespeople need to know what's going on in the back end a lot more, and that's probably very specialized, I'm guessing.
Yeah, so definitely. I mean, one of the main products that our main partner provides is a Salesforce to SysPro is the ERP system, CRM. Mm-hmm. Everything's coming to the cloud. NetSuite, you know, does a kind of it's accounting and inventory at the same time. I guess you call it an ERP system, but but you know, being able to provide that data out in the field is that's kind of getting kicked off. But also from the front end perspective, taking that data, the inventory, the accounting, everything, and pushing it through your other channels, whether you're selling through Amazon, eBay, your Magento shop, your Shopify shop, and bringing that all back. That takes a couple teams, right? It takes the web design team and the marketing team to make sure they know what they're doing as far as connecting it back to the back end team.
So, because a lot of people, it seemed like the 90s and maybe the early 2000s were full of everyone trying to build their own portal, right? And so it sounds as if you're coming to the realization that we've come to an inflection point, that the portal, it already is there. It's called the internet. It's called the greater cloud. The cloud, yeah. Right? The way of being able to basically connect in and see what's going on through the channels that you already use, whether those are social channels or other channels of your as a customer of your choosing, much less needing to build brick and mortar portal for somebody. So you have to go, hey, go to this portal and go to that portal, go to the other portal.
Right.
If you're manufacturing something, you're looking at all the different components that go into it.
Well, there's a lot of overlap there.
Yeah.
Right. And really, if you're a B2B manufacturer and that is your model and you do not have any business and you don't want to go into B2C, you can use that same B2C technology. And you just don't, you don't index it with the search engines. You go directly to and give them a portal, but you're using the Magentos, and that you could even use
right.
Shopify. I mean, it's funny to see the Shopify's and the big commerce and the community that's coming behind them to really give you a solution that's a hosted solution. It's cookie cutter, but with the open APIs, you can really do a lot with what they give you. And there's some big brands on it.
Yeah.
So it's been fun for us to kind of see that inflection point where everyone did create their own custom e-commerce site.
And it was expensive.
And it was super expensive. Yeah. And do you guys ever use Google Trends to do analysis of the market?
I haven't. Have you?
No, I've used Google Analytics.
Yeah.
But no.
Google Trends is great to kind of just get a feel for what people are searching for.
Mm.
And in my market research, before I jumped into this with my business partner, we see all these old platforms and the searches of them, OS Commerce, Core Commerce, like all the old ones that came up in the early 2000s,
right.
Just plummeting. And then we see the Shopify's and even the WooCommerce of the world hitting that exact inflection point. And it's a wave that we're excited to ride.
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting into more Shopify and BigCommerce as well, but for the, usually the B2C space.
Right.
Yeah, you guys have a little bit different space. So how does one choose an e-commerce platform? Because there's so many out there.
Yeah, you have to look at your business and what it requires from a shipping and logistics standpoint. You have to look at the platform in general and kind of the community behind it. Magento is the number one e-commerce enterprise solution.
Mm-hmm.
It has the most extensions. For a small business, it's easy to just get up and running with a Shopify or BigCommerce.
Right.
And as far as between those two, looking at the extensions out there, the community behind it, I think has a lot to do with it.
When you say community behind it, tell our listeners what you mean.
Sure. So the developers specifically.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you search something, what kind of answers can you get?
Right.
You should make a list of all the problems that you foresee or all the needs you have in your business and how you see the platform you use solving it. And you should search for those. And you should see what kind of responses are out there, what kind of forums are being asked. Or what kind of questions are being asked in the forums.
Right.
And that gives you a good sense of the community.
Okay, perfect. So marketing e-commerce sites. I mean, we did our first e-commerce site. I'm going to date myself.
Uh-oh.
1999.
Oh, boy.
I feel like the grandma here. 1999, we did our first e-commerce site. And it was a site on Storefront. I don't know if you remember that. That was a horrible platform.
I've heard of it, yeah.
Horrible. But they're not around anymore, so I can talk bad about it. But how has marketing changed with e-commerce in the last 5 years?
So I would say the biggest thing is it's going from an online brochure, right, into an experience that you walk the customer through from the section of their website that they land on, whether it's, you try to look to get the right customer at the right portion of your website, and they don't always come through your homepage.
Right.
But, driving that traffic to the right section of your website and then walking them through the experience, and it's become more and more visual with the 3D rotation and to be able to buy online and convert more. It's really about the imagery.
Gotcha. Yeah. So with the 3D imagery, I mean, doesn't that bring a site down as far as lag and load time? How do you compensate for that?
Yeah.
And mobile too, right?
Right. So I mean, when you talk about converting,
you
page speed comes into it,
right?
Page speed definitely comes in. It's one of the number one factors in that. But you have to balance that with optimizing your images. And I talk about the 3D. That's one of the things you can do. But the technology, and you talk about in the last 5 years, it's gotten better and better. And the server speeds and being able to render this kind of stuff has gotten better to where you really just have to balance. You have to see all the bells and whistles that you're giving your website and balance it with what kind of imagery can you give to increase conversion.
Right. And I always say, when somebody decides to put something on their website, why are you doing that?
Mm-hmm.
What's the purpose? And if they can't give me a good business case, forget it.
Right. Well, I agree with that. And, one of the things is that I'm sure SEO is now becoming a huge issue for folks who are trying to get their products seen and purchased out there through e-commerce. Because there was once upon a time where if you could just get, your storefront out there, Yeah. You would hit the mark.
You get sales.
Right. You get sales. But now you have a very busy, very busy internet. And my question is, is there some talk of trying to create more ecosystems between manufacturers? Like, let's say I sell nuts and Desiree sells bolts. And we need to put these things together. And you're making an airplane and you want to buy from me and you want to buy from Desiree. Mm-hmm. So you're out there trying to see where to go. Is there any ecosystem discussion and trying to figure that out? Is that something you're doing with your clients at all? Or
we look at channels mm-hmm. and where their customers are online. Google's the biggest one. Mm-hmm. Right. But that doesn't always mean that's the customer they should be targeting. So channels as in if you do want to go buy. So I just actually you guys, I'm sure, have seen the drones and things.
Oh, yeah.
I started doing with my GoPro, started doing some drone shots. And I went online and found some drones on Amazon. Mm-hmm. Right. But what I looked for after was these like little shock pads to help so that the GoPro, you know, has a good shot.
Yeah.
And I went to Amazon to find that, right? And that's just a manufacturer who makes these little shock pads across the world. And I was their customer, right? Mm-hmm. And they want to find me, and I went to Amazon, right? I didn't go to eBay, but right. for someone in apparel, they need to be in eBay. I also went to Google, and that's just what the customer landscape looks like. So we help them kind of, for one thing, manage their inventory so that they can push to Amazon, eBay, to their own store, keep the prices in line,
yeah.
and just be there. As far as partnering, I think – you know, not necessarily working with other manufacturers to put together an ecosystem, but more or less, I think the other creative thing we're doing is, okay, they want to put nuts and bolts together to make a drone or make whatever. Let's put a YouTube video out there on, you know, how you use a GoPro with this drone and how you use our shock absorbers to make sure it gives you a great shot.
Right.
So, and it's putting content out there, which everyone talks about content, but it's for a reason. And that is the new way of getting found and found from customers that are going to, for one thing, trust you because you're putting out great content that, you know, lowers that trust barrier. And then, you know, hopefully make a sale.
And right, so you're saying two things, content marketing is, and that's something that's pretty new. I mean, it's been around forever, but it's something that's becoming more to the forefront for the reasons you mentioned. And also really what you're talking about is SEO and being inside of those large retail spaces where people go, those large marketplaces where people go online.
Yeah. Multi-channel management, mm-hmm. Making sure you're in every channel where your customer's at.
Right.
So let's talk about mobile. How does that fit into the picture?
Mobile fits in the sense, and mobile, there's two parts to that. It's number one, obviously, be responsive. Make sure when people come to your actual website online that they mm-hmm. can, or on your phone, that they can purchase, and the experience is just as seamless as it is on the desktop.
Right.
That's number one.
Right.
That's the 80-20, right? Mm-hmm. That's the 20% you can do to get 80% more results.
How many people are stopping you? Are they buying stuff on their phones and their iPads and tablets?
You know, I see different numbers. Mm-hmm. Conversion traditionally is lower.
Yeah.
Just because, and I think the numbers are skewed because the mobile experience is not as good yet.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah. Yeah. And then there's a lot of people that look on their phone, but then just still feel more comfortable going to the desktop.
Right.
And just doing it. Their shopping carts there.
Seeing the big pictures.
You know, I've when my business partner listens to this, he'll laugh because I've been guilty for mm-hmm. just buying domains and buying stuff online with like, accidentally checking out when I didn't really know the price.
Oh,
like,
no.
And you know, I think people are a little bit wary of going through on your phone with limited screen space right now. And if it's not intuitive and just kind of going through that process, but every day mm-hmm. more and more people are buying online.
Yep.
I'm sorry, mobily.
Yes. On a mobile phone. Yep.
Yeah. It's on my website, but,
what is your website?
FactoryWebSolutions.com. There's a couple of stats up there. If you can't tell, I'm kind of a stat guy. And
yeah,
there's a couple up there that I think just Black Friday and Cyber Monday last year, I think it's some crazy, and you can check my website to fact check me, but I want to say like 60% increase in mobile in those 2 days by 2012 to 2013. So,
right.
All right, I'm going to throw something out. What about giving people some more slack if they buy through mobile?
Yeah,
just saying,
if
hey,
they made a mistake.
If you fat thumbed this, we're going to give you more slack if you did this on a mobile device versus doing it on a desktop.
Yeah, I think it comes back to just having that brand that, you know, everyone knows you go to Walmart and you take something back, they'll take it back. Right. They don't care if there's dirt all over it and it's a hockey stick that's been used. They'll take it
right.
back.
Or a golf club, right, Jackie?
Or a golf club's got some dings on it.
Yeah.
So I think just
don't
overall having that brand. Yeah,
that's right.
That brand that they trust.
Yeah.
Right?
So it'll become ubiquitous just once the policies get right to the world and come in alignment with the world is, which is, hey, I'm going to buy online and it's going to show up in a box. And if I don't like it, you're going to have to take it back.
Yeah, yeah. And really, Amazon, people, I'd love to see the conversion numbers on their web app because I sent two drones back. I no longer have a drone because neither one worked. But
really?
But yeah, no, they're not there yet. Mm-hmm. They're almost there. Mm-hmm. For how cheap they are, it's crazy what they can do. But
yeah.
But yeah, so Amazon, I have complete faith that they will take back anything I purchase from them.
Yeah.
And so I'm probably more inclined to just go ahead and purchase online.
Yeah.
That's cool. Very, very interesting. Well, thanks for sharing your insight today on e-commerce and manufacturing. Good luck to you.
Appreciate
with your business. So it's great. All right. So now we're going to go from manufacturing to some fun.
Oh, come on. You're saying manufacturing is not fun? Travis
no,
is still in the
it's
room.
Fun.
You have no idea the Travis kind of parties they throw in those warehouses.
He's a fun-looking guy.
Do they golf?
Of course.
I'm sure they do. They do the golf outings and all that. I know how that works. I used to work on a golf course in Schaumburg called Poplar Creek. I was the beverage cart girl for many years when I was in college. Paid really well. And Walter Payton was one of my favorites
because
he gave me nice tips. He was just a nice guy. So
we love the Bev Cart girls.
That's right. That's right. They keep things going. So Jackie Canizzo, we've got you from Judson Golf today. And thank you for agreeing to be on the show.
Thanks.
So,
thanks for having me.
Yesterday, she just, I'll do it. I'll jump in.
Sure, I don't even know where I am, but here I am.
Here she is in Sandy Springs.
Yeah.
All right, Jackie, you've been a golf pro for 20 years.
20 plus years, so I won't.
20 plus.
20 plus years, yes.
Wow. So tell us about Judson Golf. What do you do there?
Okay, so just to give you background on myself, I've been in the golf business, as I said, for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. I've been playing golf for about 40-something years.
Wow.
And since this is the greatest week of golf.
Yeah, we've got the Masters here.
Masters.
That's right.
It seemed great to have a chance to come on your show. So
perfect.
I am a golf professional. I've been doing everything from competing to coaching, teaching, to now running events. And I run a couple big events. I actually run my own junior golf foundation called the Esther Canizzo Junior Golf Foundation. And that actually is what led me to the Judson, the JCI Foundation, which is the Judson Golf. It's actually the Judson Collegiate and Legends Pro-Am Challenge, which is the official title of the event. So as I said, I've done everything from soups to nuts and bolts.
Yeah, nuts and bolts.
Except for manufacturing. Yeah. I've never manufactured anything. But so our event features the 60 of the top women collegiate golfers in the country we've invited to participate. And we also have the legends of the LPGA, players like Nancy Lopez, Rosie Jones, Jan Stevenson, Beth Daniel, folks like that. Mm-hmm. And they're paired together.
Okay.
And our event is in June. And that's just part of the event. The other piece is we also have women's leadership. Half-day program.
Yeah.
So it's a very unique and one-of-a-kind event that is only here, right here in
That's
Roswell,
a great idea. I mean, people are networking anyway on the golf course, so why not turn it into a networking event and training event?
Yeah, so what we saw, the first year we started in 2012, and out of actually a sad story of members at the club I'm at, which is Country Club of Roswell, perished in a small plane crash after coming back from watching their daughter play a collegiate golf tournament, and her brother and her guardians asked me to look into having a golf event, and we kind of came up with the idea, why not take the young girls and the best of the best and put them together, and we did see this mentorship relationship that kind of formed out of that, and there's also a pro-am with it, and so now we have the business community involved, and then to this, fast forward to this year, is how we expanded to the leadership program, so AT&T is our official sponsor, presenting sponsor, which is awesome. And we've got some other great brands from the Atlanta area that are on board with this. So,
wow, that's great. Now, how did you get started in 40 years ago? I mean, was it just something that somebody you knew played golf? Or how did you get started in it? Because there's not a lot of female golfers out there, although it's growing.
So I'm originally from Syracuse, New York, and don't hold that against me, the Orange Men. Who knew that UConn could win the championship
last night? I know it,
my
goodness gracious.
We have to mention that, because it's kind of a big thing.
Yeah.
So my mom actually started me, and that's my foundation is actually named after my mom. And so we started together back in, whatever, I won't date myself, but back in the day, as we say.
Yeah.
And I just fell in love with it. I was a tomboy and played other sports, and absolutely, it was, you know, the golden age of watching Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer duke it out back in the 70s. So I just fell in love with the game, and I knew I wanted to be a professional from the time I first played. So, as I said, everything has kind of led me.
Yeah. So, how did you go about? Tell us about the. Okay. So now we understand how you got started with it, but how did you get from there to being a pro?
So I started to play in tournaments as a junior golfer, and again, really loved it. Was not extremely successful, but had some success. And as time went on, I actually got a college golf scholarship, started at Florida State, and then finished at University of North Carolina at Wilmington. Okay. And then the natural progression was, as I said, I knew I wanted to be a professional golfer, so what do you do next? So you start on the AAA league, if you will, to try to get to the LPGA. So playing junior golf, college, and then jumping out into what is called the mini tour, in which then leads you to LPGA qualifying, which is... 6 days of the most grueling, intense competition as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And I didn't quite get there. I got very close, played really well, ran out of patience and money and kind of...
Yeah, it took a lot of that, I'm assuming. A lot of travel, a lot of... Just like anything else in the minor leagues, you're paying your dues before you...
Yeah, so there is a lot of travel and expense, and I had a little bit of sponsorship and a little bit of support, but if you don't get to the top level, it's just, it becomes a
losing proposition.
it's okay. I wouldn't trade any of the experiences. I've been everywhere in the world. I actually have played Augusta several times. I recently played Pebble Beach.
Wow.
I have incredible people that I have met through the game of golf that, it's an incredible network to have.
Yeah.
And so I'm really grateful for the...
Yeah, worth every penny, huh?
Yeah, it is. It actually is. So,
yeah.
And it's not just everybody. I mean, I find that when it comes to sports or when it comes to things like music, it's not everybody who can turn that, which most people, do as a hobby, into a career. And it just takes a special kind of person to do it, And it's amazing. I mean, because we all look at the people at the top end of this thing,
like
Tiger Woods of the world and the... Miley Cyrus is, or I don't know who.
Miley Cyrus and Miley.
Oh my goodness! You picked those two.
Well,
there's
gonna be some late breaking news at the end of this. No, I don't think. But you know what I'm saying? There's just very few people who make it to that level.
Sure.
And then everybody else who wants to do this and has a passion for it, it takes a lot to piece it together.
Yeah,
it does. And as I said, I've had some great support and great mentors. But I always say, it's, one door, closes, another door opens. So this has actually given me a lot of opportunities to, now I run my own nonprofit. Now I've helped this other nonprofit. I was telling Travis earlier that I've helped several businesses. I do some consulting, so I helped a junior golf league start from the beginning and go national. I've helped golf courses, and now Desiree and I have a mutual friend that I'm doing some work with, We Create, which is an advertising that advertises to women, advertises to women, and we're actually working on a project that involves golf.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, Diane was down at the PGA of America today. So, and a meeting I set up with the PGA because we feel like that we don't market well to women in the golf space. So, again, there's a lot of different angles you can take with your career, even if you don't achieve that highest level of competition. So,
Are you guys working on an online program for this particular piece?
Should we?
Yes, absolutely.
Can see some conversation taking place after
the
show.
I think so.
Experts at the table here.
So we, it's, again, going back to the network that I've, been involved with golf, and you recently said you took up the game.
Yeah, I just took it up again. And
there's a market out there. And we're just trying to get more women engaged in it, and we'll definitely be looking to do some online. Should I do some online video coaching?
Oh my gosh, yes, like definitely.
I got some great actually videos. If you,
I think it's
a YouTube
great
channel. Good.
I'll tell you. Several years ago now, my boss, she was trying to do some networking with some other women around town, and she suggested that they play golf together, and they actually got a pro to do some lessons for them, and it turned out to be a great networking opportunity for her.
Wow.
And I think that especially, you look at large corporations such as AT&T and others, where there is a network of women professionals, this would be a fantastic thing. And a fantastic business opportunity for you to continue, not only from a charitable perspective, but also from a for-profit perspective to look at that. I think it's a great business model.
Yeah, I mean, I always look at the chamber. One of the reasons I'm learning is because there's always a chamber golf outing. And, mm-hmm. you know, yeah. I've always wanted to play in that. I mean, there's right. a lot of opportunity to talk to people that, you know, are very successful, to learn from them on the course. And you also learn a lot about people on the golf course, yeah. don't you? I mean, the good and the bad.
You I know? Mean, what other opportunity are you going to have to be, you know, could be 2 hours of nine holes, 3 hours, five right. hours, whatever, on a golf course.
Yeah.
You know, you're having that up close and personal.
You don't get that much time almost anywhere else.
No. Right. And you're there for another reason, but, mm-hmm. you know, it's the incremental things that kind of happen on the side, and it's fascinating. You certainly don't get it with tennis.
No,
when you're across the, you know, looking
right.
across the net.
You're too tired.
Like yeah. it's something that you can do at different levels. So
right.
Desiree and I can go out and play, and if you get to a point, need to I'll let you drive
pick it up.
Me.
I'll
pick
let
it up.
You do my
pick
drive.
It up, Desiree. That's right. No, I'm kidding. But that's also totally part of it. You know, my mission is to show, and this is what I think that. The you know, other professionals and the PGA hasn't done a great job of it to show that it doesn't have to be, you know, 18 holes, keeping a handicap, keeping score.
Yeah.
You know, my mission is to try to get people to see that it can be fun and it doesn't have to be that old, you know, that old model going back to, you know, technology. I mean, we have to come up to the times as well, and mm-hmm. people are busy and they don't have a lot of time. So can you go out and, you know, play a few holes and enjoy it?
Yeah.
Which I think you can.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And, you know, I'm just excited because it seems like that there's a lot more women embracing the sport. Mm-hmm. And, I want my girls to definitely learn mm-hmm. how to play. Mm-hmm. They're 14 and 16. And, you know, this is a good time for them to mm-hmm. start.
Mm-hmm. So, anytime is a good time.
Yeah, exactly.
What have you seen from a technology perspective? I mean, people have been talking. I talked to a guy in, I think in Denmark or someplace like that. He had this golf app that was supposed to, you walk in and it just automatically keeps score for you more mm-hmm. or less. And then it's transmitting that via wireless and, you know, back at the clubhouse, everyone could see the standings in real time for even something just like a tournament.
Right.
Like, I mean, obviously they have that for the professionals, but, you know, something for just an amateur sure. Tournament.
Well, I think that there's a couple different things that technology is doing. The, you know, technology we're able to, from a coaching standpoint, that has been a big vibe in the last couple of years is to, you know, we're talking about ball speeds and spins and all those things. And is that really what the average golfer really needs? Probably not, but it's fun and it's sexy, so people mm-hmm. are really into it. And then back to your point with the apps, now there's a million apps now that are, you know, you can transmit data, you can transmit score. I mean, you can be in a pro-am and other people are seeing what you're doing, and there seems to actually probably even that same company probably approached me about working with our tournament you know, because people, there's an interest. There's got to be different, you know, there's all these different ways for us to attract people to the game, and that's certainly one of them. So it's fun.
It makes it a little easier, mm-hmm. right? Just mm-hmm. for people to interact sure. with one another, even across from mm-hmm. from the foursome or whatever mm-hmm. it might be that's playing.
Well, you know, Google Glass is built with two sports apps. One's a running app and one's a golf app.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I just learned that.
I didn't know that either, so.
I just learned that from a friend of mine who has the Google Glass, and I was just in a meeting with her, and she said, yeah, there's a golf app.
So. I wonder what it does.
I'm thinking rangefinder. So, you know, it can measure the distance of your ball, which is kind of cool. Right?
Yeah,
you know?
It is cool.
I know. I mean, there's so much out there now. It blows me away. But can you imagine Google Glass out there on the golf course? I don't know.
Yeah.
Tiger vision.
Exactly.
Yeah. I never play Tiger Woods, Tiger vision.
Yeah.
I think eventually the answer is, but just it seems like Google Glass is so many more practical.
I know.
And especially, you know, you're out recreationally having fun.
And people get nervous around people who are wearing the Google Glass. They're like, are you taking my picture? Are you filming me right now? No, I'm not filming you.
Yeah. It's you know, it's fun.
Yeah,
it can be fun.
So Jackie, what I worked in an office a number of years back where we were trying to put together something similar. A guy in the office, he had some challenges with two of his children. We wanted to put together a benefit
sure.
golf event, and boy, it was not easy. Mm-hmm. And we all sat in meeting rooms. Everyone, okay, I'll call this person, I'll call that person. What kind of advice can you give to people who are looking to do something like this, and what kind of help could you provide to those people, or if that's something you would do?
Sure, absolutely. Again, you know, I do a lot of consulting with other events and stuff like that. I don't know what challenges they would have, but it's you know, you have to decide where you want to have it. Certainly, your date, when you have tournaments.
Well, that was the biggest challenge.
Okay,
not to cut you off, but it's like people
cut me off.
It's like, you know.
I was going to ask you, what was your challenge?
Right. I mean, July. Okay. Well, July gets hot. You know. All right. Well, how about June? Well, it could be cold. You know. So
really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. So you have all these. I mean, I oversimplify, but sure. you get the idea that you know, business people like don't like to do things on Thursdays. Mm. You know. Oh, well, my customers don't. Only doing things on Mondays, you know. Well,
fascinating.
Yeah.
So, but the problem was that there were a lot of people sure. that were trying to just to put together an event, and mm-hmm. I think that was probably the problem.
Yeah. I think that you have to, I guess, first of all, you have to. It's just funny. there are certain months that there are a ton of golf events.
Right, that was the other thing. There were
June
other,
yeah. is one for sure. October mm-hmm. is one. I happen to have both of my events. I have an event in October. I have two events in June. So go figure. I learned my own lesson. with the heat in the summertime, you can certainly do it at different times. But I think that, you know, you have to look. I have an event in New York, in Syracuse, in June. And what we looked at is we want to be one of the first events up there. So our event is the beginning of June. You know, my event in October is on Columbus Day when people and kids are off school. So I think you want to look at those and you want to look at who your market is and who you're trying to get to participate. I think when you certainly find the date, then you can try to find a course and then try to find, you know, well, how much do you want to spend? I mean, I certainly can run somebody through a very, you know, diligent little...
Yeah, and for you it seems like it's easy, but I think that a lot of anyone who's just trying to do this, it's not easy.
It's like anything in life. You think you can do it yourself, and then all of a sudden you realize, oh, there's got to be someone out there who can do that.
Well,
for me.
There are companies that make, you know, a good bit of money off of charities. Sure. It's unfortunate that they do, mm-hmm. Because you can, you can go to a facility and get one of the professionals at a facility to help, or you can, you know, contact somebody like me, and I'm happy to help somebody kind of navigate through it, because it can be a little daunting, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So big golf state. So you're from New York, and I'm sure people in New York will say, New York's the biggest golf state. I used to live in Minnesota, and believe it or not, people in Minnesota are like, Minnesota is a huge golf state.
It is.
Well, right. So,
and Michigan.
Right.
Yeah.
So, first of all, what are the biggest golf states in your mind? Why are you in Atlanta? Is this a big golf state? And Georgia? And
how many questions are you going to ask her?
Well, you know, just run it down here. Run it down, if you wouldn't mind.
You know, the I think that in the Northeast, like New York, there's a lot of golf courses in New York, and not just where I'm from, but all the way down into huge in Westchester and Long Island. California is probably California, I think, has the highest concentrate or the most golf courses in the United States. So it kind of goes weather-wise, California, Arizona in there. And then the Midwest, I can't quite figure the Midwest out. I don't know if it's just that.
Chicago is supposed to have a lot.
When do they have time to golf when it's snowing all the time?
Right.
They do.
Right.
They have huge tournaments out there.
And I think part of it is the tradition. So in New York, there's a lot of you know, again, just going back historically, mm-hmm. there was a lot of golf professionals that came out of New York for some reason. There's a long history there. And here, it's very much about the tradition. You have Bobby Jones.
Right.
Right.
And there's in Atlanta. No, I'm in Atlanta mostly because of the weather and because I, you know, Florida, again, back another big golf state. I didn't want to spend my time in Florida, so I was kind of thinking, where can I go that I can get both, you know, the weather, but also not be in touristy
the
Florida.
Humidity.
But I think
too.
Here, you're, you know, and certainly the Augusta plays into that as well. And my goal was when I came here was to find my way to play Augusta, and I managed to do it.
All right, so you're going
to
tell us that story? Or
how much time do we have?
I'm sorry, I want to hear it.
Yeah,
go ahead. We got time. Definitely.
I actually just wrote about it in a blog because, of it being Masters Week, but... I started teaching a member's son, and I had no idea that the dad was a member at Augusta, and I was just teaching the young guy. He wasn't a kid; he was in his 20s.
Yeah,
and you know, we just kind of got to be friends, and about 6 months or 8 months into it. His game was improving tremendously, and I got a call, and he said, hey, is there any chance that you can, you know, play Augusta with my dad and me on Saturday, whatever, January 5th or something? I was like, what?
Are you kidding me?
Let me think about that.
Yeah.
Yes. So, and then I started asking questions. I'm like, who is this guy?
Anyway,
right. Google him.
Yeah, and come to find out he had, you know, been a president of a, you know, major corporation, and, you know, again.
There you go.
It was far exceeded my expectations. It was something that I couldn't have ever imagined I would do. I mean, it's so famous. Every hole is famous. There's shots that are famous.
Yeah.
It's very understated elegance. It's yeah.
And even the drive-in.
The drive-in.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And it's very women-friendly. It was women-friendly before they even had members, and people don't know that.
That they right?
do.
That's surprising.
They do over 1,400 women guest rounds a year.
Wow.
The women actually, up until this year, got to use the champions locker room. Now okay. there's a women's locker room
right.
because of Condoleezza and Darla Price. Mm-hmm. And but it was just one of those experiences that you know, I'll never forget. But I hate to say it, but I've played more than once.
Right.
So I haven't been invited back.
Do you get nervous playing on a course that's famous? I mean, does it change your game at all?
You know, again, interesting enough, I was so nervous when I first played, and again, you're just really hard to focus. It was a little overwhelming and kind of mentally challenging because you're just observing, and then in your mind you're thinking. And even my host had said to me on the first hole, he said, "Jackie, do you know how many people would trade places with you in the world
Thanks
right
a lot.
Now?"
Yeah, that's all right. I
mean. And play a boatload of money, and I'm like, But we had a great. He's great. You know, very humble gentleman. But so it was nerve wracking the first time, and the second time, I really made myself. I said, "Well, I'm just going to play and have fun," and actually had a great round. So it was. It's really special, and it's a treat that, as I said, I'll never take for granted, and I feel like it's one of the greatest accomplishments of my golfing career was having to play that. And I think it's because I was a good teacher and just, you know, treated somebody, you know, nicely. And they treated me nicely.
Yeah.
So
you brought value to the table in your lessons. And
that's what we're all trying to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So where can we find you online?
Well, if you Google me.
So, yeah.
Well, the event is judsongolf.com. That's
okay.
where the big event is. And we'd love to have all of your listeners come out and
be great.
Play, or not play, but
watch.
You know, watch and be a part of it. We're actually, this year, because of the collegiate angle, we have a university day, so we're trying to get alumni and folks to come out and support. And we have a kids' day on Saturday, and then there's a concert in the park on the which is in the subdivision. So we've got a lot of different spectator-added value events going on as well.
What's the date again? Remind us.
June 26th is the Women's Leadership program, and it's 27th through the 30th. So June 26th through the 30th.
Perfect. Well, great. Thanks for sharing your story with us.
Thanks
today.
For having us. It was awesome.
Really enjoyed it. All right, Sander.
Well, can I ask one more question? Who's going to win the Masters this year?
seems to be top of mind. I'm not sure there's a
Tiger.
Really,
oh, wait, forgot. He's not playing.
I'm not really sure there's an, you know, I guess the odds on favorite is Rory, but I'm not really sure why.
Bubba's my favorite.
You know, Bubba, I mean, Adam Scott could be, been playing pretty well, but struggles with the putter a good bit. I don't know. I think it's going to be really interesting. I'll be there Thursday. I'll give you a call later.
All right, sounds good. Check in with us.
All
right, I'm done now, Desiree.
All right, thank you. All right, for Business Radio X, High Velocity Radio, this is Desiree Scales.
And Sander Bean.
Have a great week.